Well, I have some good news this morning. Our son Josh is here today. I want to greet my son. Josh, you got applause and the other two kids did not. So already you've had an impact here, son. But Ellen and I have said that he's the wittiest of us all and the most intelligent of us all. And he's the best traveler of all three kids. And of course, he's my favorite of the three. So don't tell your siblings that. Sound team, okay, yeah. No, buddy, it's good to see you. He's the one son who has the most questions to process with me. And I always love that, talking with him about everything through church and faith and life. And so he's got a depth that we love. So I want to say thank you. You know, it's been 12 years since I've been to general counsel, and I always underestimate how much it would mean to me to go. And for those of you who don't know, it's a gathering of all the pastors, and not all the missionaries can get there, not all the pastors are there, but we're there for several things that are very important. And so for me, at times, it can be like a roller coaster. You could go from one conversation, Jerry, classmate of mine, I invested in him. His three kids have graduated Crown. They're gone their way to ministry. And then I talk to my other pastor friend, and their son has taken their life. Boom, boom. And then I go over here, and it's the same thing. So-and-so is married. They talk about all these things, and I go over here. And another friend of mine has said right in front of his congregation, I'm out of the Alliance, this is my last Sunday. So those of you who want to come with me, come and we'll go from there. That's a power move. That's politics, man. That's not of God. Sorry, I'm getting explicit today too, Rick. And I want to follow what Rick said. That was excellent. Did you hear everything he said? That's a good leader worth following. I could not have said that better myself. That's why you do partnerships in ministry. Anyway, so it being together was just great. Thank you for your support to send me. You two will give an update. Sorry, I was all over the place. And I felt like I abandoned them, and so forth. But we had some good talks. We had some good talks there. Here's what I wanted to say about the family, the Alliance family, and then you. Big picture. A.B. Simpson is our founder, and I'm now reading the latest biography of his life. And here's two extra ones. So I'll put one on this side, whoever gets it first. And I'm going to put one on this side, whoever gets it first, on us. They were free anyway at the meeting. I was making myself look really good there for a moment. But A.B. is one of my heroes. He was a Presbyterian pastor, very reformed, solid believer, and had an agreement with the church in New York City that they would reach the masses. And when he started to, and not just him, but when he started to reach the masses, the agreement he had with the church was not always followed through. They didn't like all the new people that were coming. And when, get this is true, 100 Italians wanted to get membership, the leadership didn't let them. Hey, what's up with that? What's wrong with Cannizzaros and Russos and Lombardis and, Lamborghinis and Rigatoni and... You got a problem with us? But Simpson said that broke his heart, and as a result of that, started a mission organization to reach the masses. And he also started a Christian organization to have the deeper life of Christ, and he brought those together, and that's our name, Christian and Missionary Alliance. We have over 2,000 churches in America, about 400,000 believers, but our worldwide family is 6 million people in multiple countries. And we celebrated 50 years since the Vietnam. Remember Vietnam? Remember that evacuation from Saigon? They're boarding the airplane. And My roommates in college grew up in Vietnam before that. And so hearing about the Vietnamese church and how God is working and doing since then warms your heart that God is at work. And so that's the big picture. Now down, let's bring it to here to New Buffalo. I have prayed this week. I have processed. Rick and I have talked. And I'm just going to say this. When I pray for you, which I do, some of you more than others. Seriously, when I pray for you, I got that passage on Samuel in the transition of leadership. I was reading one day, it happened to be where I was, and the Lord just put his finger on me, talk on this. And if you remember, it moved from a prophetic leadership to a kingship leadership. In other words, and how did Samuel respond to that? Woe is me. They don't want me. And God said, it's not about you. It's about me. And so maybe in this time, this is kind of a recalibrating of where am I with you, God, in this? Is my love for you going to go deeper? Is my fear of the Lord going to go broader? This is where God was taking Samuel. And out of that, he anointed the next leader, David. And so let's keep that in mind as we work through this transition. And I thank you, Rick, because it is. I give you a little bit of my heart, and then we got to pick up and leave again. You know, and it's six of those that we've done. There was something else in that passage I wanted to remind us. No, I think that's it. I think that's it. Good? Good? Well, while we were at council, I had my message all prepared. I told Paul, you know, and I felt like on Friday, I'm like, that's not the message. So yesterday, I wrote the message out yesterday. Elle and I attended one of the seminars. Terry used to be in our denomination. He started his own ministry now. And as we were listening to this teaching, we were just so blown away. Ellen said to me after, I think that's the best teaching I've ever heard in my whole life. And I was like, what about? You know, I've always lived in the shadow of, you know, Charles Ingalls. He's the best on Little House on the Prairie. He hugs the best. And, you know, now I'm second to Terry. But out of that teaching, because he took an outline of his own life, you know, and I said, I'm taking that outline, Lord, all right, I'll go with it. And it's called about attachment love. Attachment love. Because we're in the book of 1 John, the epistle. I want to walk with you through that. And I gave you an overview last time because John is wrestling for his people to let them know this is what authentic faith really is. This is what real is spiritual reality. And John does this. We looked at that, that God is light and God is love. And so he takes these two realities and he unfolds that. Because we today live in a culture where we're trying to find the real in all of this fake news and all of these different deceptions that are going on. And so what I have continue to learn and continue to want to learn is when it comes to love with God and with each other, we have to continue to grow in what it means to receive love in order to give love. And you cannot give that which you've not first received. And so I want to look at that with you because I'm reminded of what John Maxwell said is that true success is when those that know you the best love you the most. That's good. In other words, put it this way, those that don't know you as much as the best but love you the most doesn't mean as much as the ones that do know you, like all of you, and they love you the best. There's a difference. And this is what leadership is all about. Can we grow as a leader with a group of people over time when you go through this past week, right? Because you can You can, John Maxwell also says this, you can love people without leading them, but you can't lead them without loving them. And so this is a test of love this week. It's a test of love. And so I want to read about what true love is. 1 John, let's turn there. 1 John 4. 1 John 4. I'm not going to exegete this. I'm not going to break it down, but I do want to read it. And out of this, talk about the seven components of attachment love. Attachment love. 1 John 4, 7 to 12. John here, verse 7 of chapter 4. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. One place it comes from. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, but God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. Wow. How could I not break that down? But I wanted to read that to you. So here, what I want to talk to you about today is, it's called attachment love, and there's seven dynamics, dimensions of this that God works with us. These seven, again, Terry mentions these, but I put my own words to them, but he said is where God moves us. First, I see you. Then I am safe with God. He stands with me. He searches for me. He soothes me. He sets a table for me in the wilderness. And finally, seven, I'm secure because he secures me. When you look at Jesus' prayer, he said this, may they be one as we are one. When God is working in our lives, in his love towards us, he's actually moving us in his love towards oneness. And along the way, we attach ourselves to God. So we have children here, right? That attachment, that bond begins right away at birth, right? That moment our eyes set sights on them and we move them along in the bonding process. And God does this with us. So that first one, I see you, when God says, I see you. That's a powerful statement. It's not just, I'm looking at you, I see you. There's a difference. Seeing you means I see all of you. Looking at you is more like I'm making an observation. It's much more deep, it's much more personal. I see you. I see you. To be looked at is to be observed. To be seen is to be known. And this is the love of God. I think of the calling of Nathanael by Jesus. When you go to the Gospel of John, verses 1 to 44. Let me just read this story. It's the Apostle John. And he captures this moment of in Nathanael's life. I want you to see something here. Verse 44, I think it's Philip who goes out to get him, Nathanael. It says here, the next day Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, follow me. Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, we have found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Nazareth? Can anything good come from there? Nathanael asked. Come and see, said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching him, he said of him, here truly is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. How do you know me? How do you know me? Nathanael asked. Jesus answered, I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you. Then Nathanael declared, Rabbi, you are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel. Jesus said, "You believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. You will see greater things than that." You know what Jesus is saying? You ain't seen nothing yet. Here's why. Here's what I want you to see in this. He moved from a place of skepticism. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? But when Jesus said, "I saw you," in other words, "I saw you in my heart with my Father, that when he picked you and talked to you to bring you to me in the fig tree, I saw you there." He moves from a place of, can anything good come out of, you know, Nazareth? Can anything good come out of Duncannon or whatever place you think? And he moves from just one statement, "I saw you." You are the Son of God. That's a big jump. So when you're seen, there's something that happens to us. This is the love of God. This is the love of God. He does this with us. Do you feel seen by God today? What is he seeing in you? He sees a son and daughter. I'm safe with God. In a world of fractured relationships that happen at a rapid pace in our life and culture, in a world where evil seems to be like unashamed right now, right? It's just so overt. In a world where emotional attachment to relationships is kind of a risky business to be in. In a world where we're severed and we're marginalized and even crushed. I even said in Sunday school, I saw somebody that was up for the board of directors who really hurt me internationally. Really hurt me. But I knew I needed to break that breach and went over and hugged the person. I did that more for me than I did for this person. You hear what I'm saying? In a world where safe places create an opportunity for hope, right? What when God says, "You're safe with me," what he's saying is, come out of the cave of isolation and into the field of play with me. I am a safe place for you. You see, to feel safe in love is to know that he will not mistreat us emotionally. He'll confront us. He'll rebuke us. I have learned that his rebukes come from love. Have you ever been rebuked by God? Have you heard it? It's wonderful. It's inviting. It's hard. I've shared with you, I think, one story with my daughter Alicia. I was praying one time. I said, right, Josh? You know, Alicia. And he said, "What are you trying to control me with your prayers?" Yikes. Yikes. See, King David lived in a world where he knew he needed the safety of God, the refuge of God. And the quicksands of relational peril, when you've been in the court with Saul and all of a sudden you're on the run, where's a safe place, man? You know? I was at the king's court, like the safest place, but it was really in the refuge of God that he found in the wilderness, because friendly fire came during his life, colleagues provide friendly fire to David. Ahithophel, that guy really hurt David. But you read the Psalms, you find out he found a refuge in God. Psalm 18, David said these things. I love this. He starts out with such affection. "I love you, Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold." You hear that? He's a safe place. He's a safe place. Come to the safety. Come to the safety. He's on the run here from Saul in this passage. And then he says these words here. Verse 30, I mean, it's a psalm of 50 verses of all about the safety of God. But then he says these things. Verse 30, "As for God, his way is perfect. The Lord's word is flawless. He shields all who take refuge in him. For who is God besides the Lord? And who is the rock except our God? It is God who arms me with strength and keeps me my way secure. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He causes me to stand on the heights." I love reading that because I was seeing a deer on the heights as I was driving down here, and I was thinking half the people in my congregation want to kill it, but I just want to admire it, you know. Leave those deer alone, you know. The deer are a safe place for me. They're coming to my backyard. So, honey, we're opening up our backyard to all the deer in Pennsylvania. We're a safe place. But sometimes, you know, you need to know that God is a safe place, because sometimes I take my wife and she takes me places that's not always safe. I took her up on New Hampshire mountains. We're trying to do all 48. We've gotten to 13, but she, as you know, she had to have surgery on her hand because she fell, and, you know, and Pete's not a safe place to go on some of these hobbies, you know, and but God's a safe place. God is a safe place. He stands with me. He stands with me. He stands with you. I see you. You're safe with me, and I stand with you. When Jesus stands, what he's saying is he's indicating, I'm for you. When he stands, he's pointing at you out of the crowd. I'm with you. To move from a place of sitting to standing is a gesture of affirmation, an affirmation in the state of trouble. The stand is to be identified when all others are unsure. The stand is to be acknowledged in a world of depersonalization. It is a world of depersonalization. You are a number. It is to be recognized in a world of avoidance. It is to be remembered in a world of forgetfulness. You go to Acts 7, I'm not going to read it. It's the story of Stephen, right? Remember our first martyr in our church? And he's basically giving them a dissertation of the history of Israel. Here is our history. And he nailed it. I mean, he preached a great sermon. And then he says to them, and you crucified the Christ, right? And they pick up stones. And what does Stephen say? Here's what Stephen said. Stephen said, the story says, but Stephen, full of the Holy Spirit, looked up to heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God. Look, he said, I see heaven open and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God. You understand? Jesus sat at the right hand of God, but now he is standing. When you stand with him and stand for truth, and you're in trouble, he stands for you. So however this culture is going and we choose to stand, he's not sitting, he's standing with you. He's standing. It's a beautiful picture. He searches for you. This one I like, but they all mean attachment love, right? But this one resonates with me as I meditated on this yesterday. You know why? I like the idea of being sought out, you know? Because don't you feel like in the shadows, you know, you're sort of forgotten, you know? But what he's saying is, I went like this and I looked for you. I found you. I went after you. I'm searching for you. Is that different than being, you know, recruited on email or recruited by coaches that look for vocations for you and they just are just exchanging? No. He comes to your house and says, I got a job for you. Whoa, you just left the internet to come to my house to tell me I got this job? Or, you know, he searches for us. When Adam and Eve blew it, what did God do? He went to them. Where are you, Adam? So remember this, ladies and gentlemen, the moment you walk away, he's doing the same thing with you. Where are you going, New Buffalo? Where are you going? He searches. The 99 sheep, he leaves the 99 to go to the one. There is something about the picture of Jesus taking the lamb like this, you know, that you've seen in Sunday school, right? I just love that picture. You know, I'm just like, he came for me. He came for you. He went out of his way. And he has no regret. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you a story about searching. I was telling Ellen this week, I said, or Friday, I think this is just going to be a devotional. This is turning into a long message, so deal with it. I'm like, here's what I want you to see. You know, sex trafficking is a major international issue in our world today. You know, 90% of the times I hear about it, it's in a horrible light, like the realities of it and what's going on. Rarely do I hear a story that tells me that God is searching for these children. I'm just going to use his name, John. I met John. We were sitting around. We were after general counsel, one of our meetings at night. That's kind of, I wasn't why with you guys too often, but we sat around, and Rob Reamer, who's in our Sunday school, Josh, said, John, you got to tell your story, man. John got his master's. John was a successful businessman in insurance business, hit it big time, got his master's generally in the area of sex trafficking. Then he did his doctorate. He was in a cohort behind me on sex trafficking and how to deal with it and all of this. When God called him, searched for him and picked him and said, I want you to make a difference in this, he put, and I'll call her Joan. She was a Cambodian girl on his heart. And when he put that woman on his heart, he could not get her out of his mind. And for 3 years, he searched for her in Cambodia and spending thousands of dollars to find her. And as a result of finally finding her, and it's an amazing story, he took 45 minutes. When he finished, he said, I'm sorry for talking so long. I was like, John, keep talking, dude. I needed this. Because if you know the stories of what are happening to children, it's horrific. It's horrible. But here's John. I'm like, this dude is like, he's a warrior, man. I'm like, check in, but this guy goes right in the middle of it. And so I said to him, I said, John, what keeps you going? He said, when I see the girls that I've rescued married and having children. I said, wow. That's a picture. He searches for us. He soothes us. He soothes us. That sounds so feminine, but you know what, men? We need soothing. We need nurturing. All of us. You know it. When you're sick and when you're hurt and when you're dealing with ailments and disease and struggles and your senses are going south, you're like, what? What? You know? You need soothing. And sometimes our soothing is not about the physical. It's about the emotional, relational, sometimes the spiritual. There's no relief in sight. You're fighting for your health. It's going south. But it's not about the body. It's about your soul. It needs soothing. Attachment, love, God brings us through. He speaks to us in those places. And he puts the ointment. And the ointment he puts is the oil of joy. I'm with you in your pain. I will soothe you. Come to him. During our prayer time at council, our friends Rhonda and Wanda did a teaching on healing, and we had communion, and then they mobilized us to pray for people that raised their hand that needed prayer. I saw a young lady to my left, and Ellen came with me. There was a group of about six of us around her, and she's dealing with ideation suicide. You know, this is one of our workers, okay? Pastors, leaders, we all struggle. So we started praying for her. She was we were in the circle, she kept talking to me. I was like, there's eight of us here, but okay. But I knew God was on me to start to walk her through some things. And as I prayed with her and talked with her, I said, I'm hearing this word curse over your life. We need to break that. And then this young Chinese woman, man, she was amazing, man. She just went boom, 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 walked her through soul healing. Ellen said to me later, that was a Chinese firecracker, man. That was amazing. And then this young lady looked at my wife and said, are you a mother? She said, could you pray a mother blessing on her? I go, exactly. When you're cursed, you need a mother blessing. God soothes us. He soothes us. And this is exactly what happened, this young lady. He sets a table for us in the wilderness. The wilderness are those places where you're out there, right? And you're in the ditch, and it's quiet, like uncomfortably quiet and desolate. You're out there, and here's what I want you to see. David says this, he sets a table for me in the presence of my enemies. What he's saying is there's a table of fellowship I want you to come to, and I want to talk to you about how to live in the wilderness. Because it's when we're in those places that we seem to grow our most than on the mountaintops that are good, and I enjoy them, both physically and spiritually. But I know it seems like I grow more in the attachment of God in the ditch than I do on the cleft, on the rock, and so forth. I remember doing a SoulQuest conference and speaking to 35 people, and this couple came forward and confessed to adultery. And I was like amazed at what God was doing, but it was after driving, I was like, Lord, this is what I long for, is just to be with you in the middle of that mess. I want them to find you in the middle of our mess. He sets the table of fellowship to heal us and restore us. The Apostle Paul cried out 3 times, right? Heal me, Lord. Satan was tormenting him, and God said, Saul or Paul, my grace is enough for you. You're fine. And those are the places that Paul grew the most, I think. Attachment love. Lastly, I am secure because he secures me. In a world where change is rapidly happening and the foundation of our institutions are shifting, where security and getting a home, if you're a first-time married couple and you want to get your first home, or the security from a government that seems to make the right decisions, or security in the educational system that is so woke, or security in the job market if you've been fired, or security from finances that just seem to never get above a place of security to a place. His attachment love brings us to a place of security that no matter what, I have enough because of him. It's about the preservation of us, his saints and children. I love that verse. He that began the good work in you will continue it until the day of Jesus Christ. There's security in salvation. I like that. What he builds will not erode. What I build, but again, apart from him, we can do nothing. I want to do everything he's doing and letting go of the things I've been trying to do. And I saw some of those things this week. There's a security in your identity, a security in your destiny. There's something about security that helps us move forward in life. When they built the San Francisco Bay Bridge, Ellen and I are, as you guys know, we love to go to the national parks. We're going to Yellowstone National Park this summer. We will not be here generally in the month of July. We will be in Yellowstone looking for wolves and bears, lions and tigers and bears, oh my, or whatever else you can fill that in with. Or we'll be running from lions and tigers and bears. But here's what I want to say to you. We love national parks. We are going across San Francisco Bay Bridge. And I remembered the history of this bridge, that when they were building that bridge, men were falling into their deaths. And so there was, you know, a complaint you need to do, take measures to provide some security. So they decided to put a large net wherever they were working. Did you know after they put that net there, nobody fell after that? In other words, when there was no net there, there was a prospect of death. But when there's a net there, knowing that if I fall, I'll be okay, you operate at a different level when you're operating in security. So if you know you're secure in Christ, how do I say this? I could lose my pastorate, but I don't lose my calling. Right? When I heard Rick made that announcement of Eric's decision not to. This is not about Eric. I heard this, oh. Okay, just be careful. Don't think too low of yourself if you are. You know, what's wrong with us? Don't stay there. It's okay to ask a question, but don't stay there. Rise it to another level. God is bringing us along. And this is an opportunity to attach to his love. I am secure. This church is secure. What do I mean by that? Churches are closing in the Alliance. Some of them need to. Some of them, it's too bad. But in Christ, you're never closed. It's never over. What did Jesus say? I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. I close with this story. We were at Sunday school today, and I was reminded of a story that I was familiar with. And I want to read it to you. I realize that there's a risk in doing that only because I don't have my $1 pair of glasses up here because I don't need them yet. But yeah. Hey, I just saw my eye doctor and everything's fine. Okay, there you go. I know the story. Rob told me. I know it. I don't need to read it. Here's what I want you to understand. There are times that we grow in the attachment love with God, that we reach a place that we can be with people in prayer without saying anything. I've wondered about this for years, and then I read about it theologically, biblically, and also through the work of Teresa of Avila, who, as you know, is one of my heroes. And Rob tells the story of Martin and Rob. They were the men that I followed for many years, still do, and benefit from. But Martin's wife, Diana, was going through some very difficult brain cancer issues. And Rob went over to pray for her one time, and he just put his hand on her, and he prayed nothing. And he just was present. Several days later, Martin called and said, "Hey, Rob, just calling, bro. Like, what did you pray for Diane?" He goes, "Nothing." "What do you mean nothing? You don't not pray anything, you know?" He said, "I didn't. I just was present, being Jesus with her." And Martin went, "Oh, that's what it was. Because she said Jesus was there. Jesus was present. Jesus is there." Ladies and gentlemen, attachment love will bring you to a place where, like John says here, which we'll get to in a couple weeks, that God is love. And the only reason you and I love is because he loves us. And when we love with that love, it's a different level of love. And then we graduate and we graduate and we graduate. We go higher and higher and higher in love with him and the love that he has for us. And that's how you grow. And that's when you move away from a plateaued culture of love to a higher level. That's the only way to get out of it. There's practical ways we can do that. And so we're going to be going to the communion table here, but first we're going to sing. And as we come to the communion table, it is the example of perfect love, a life sacrificed for our sins. And so let me pray, Paul.